sharing this. A loan program amidst a sea of political diatribes that is devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing, and now to the largest segment of society. To those who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and media institutions are corrupt. That they have universally become counterproductive. That they cannot be fixed. And slowly, but surely, many of you are coming to realize that all of the world's military institutions are also corrupt. That they indeed, too, are counterproductive. And that the issues that plague them cannot be resolved. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this program, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. Before we begin, I'd like to rebuke Dr. Charles Stanley and his book, Waiting on God. If you're waiting on God, you don't know him. If you're waiting on God, you will wait forever. If you are waiting on God, you are clueless as to who he is and what he wants. And as well as what he is offering. Yahweh has invited us to participate in a relationship with him. It is our option to engage or not. If you're waiting, then you're not engaging. It is Yahweh who asked us, encouraged us to observe his Torah, his teaching, his guidance. If you're waiting, then you're not observing. It is Yahweh who has invited us to 7 annual meetings each year, parties, celebrations of the relationship, the means to salvation. If you're waiting and not responding, then you're not saved. If you're waiting on God, you do not know him. If you're writing a book and trying to sell it on this notion of waiting on God, then you are a deceiver. The notion of waiting on God, it comes from the Christian mythos that God is involved in every aspect of a believer's life. And so if God is not immediately answering the believer's prayer, then it must be that God has different timing and we need to wait for God's timing. That is the excuse that is given. It's all hogwash. All of it. As we turn to the news, 12 people were murdered at a newspaper office in Paris. This was not a random act of violence. This newspaper had been attacked once before. The act for which the newspaper was attacked was a cartoon depicting what's called the Prophet Muhammad. It should be noted that Muhammad was not a prophet. He never issued a single prophetic proclamation that came true. The Quran even affirms that Muhammad was incapable of prophecy. He was not a prophet. Not even by the Quran's definition. The people that perpetrated this act were not lone wolves. They did not do it for personal reasons. They did not do it as a means to steal money. They did not do it because something had happened to them for which they sought personal revenge. It was part of a very large cause, the largest criminal enterprise in the history of the world. So I would ask you, Scott, is the execution of 12 people who did absolutely nothing wrong a criminal act?
Yeah, I believe it's called murder.
Yeah, mass murder, actually, when you kill 12 people.
Yep.
Now, I would ask you, when we talk about murders, and we're most familiar with murders in the United States, are most murders in the United States caused by one of two acts? Somebody is involved in, say, the drug trade or some criminal activity, and they kill somebody either while trying to rob their premises for drug money, or they kill a rival as part of a drug cartel or drug gang. Is that the one of the two primary
I would say that
murder?
most murders have another crime that was going on also involved. I would say, probably a larger percentage, yes.
Yeah, and the second would be crimes of passion, where somebody thinks that they can resolve some dispute amongst someone that they have a relationship with through killing them. Would that be the second most prevalent cause for murder?
Those would be the two that you'd hear about the most, yeah.
Okay. That were any of those at play in the murders of the 12 people associated with the newspaper in Paris?
I don't think so. Not that I've seen. No. As far as I know, it was a cartoon.
Yeah, the answer is unequivocally no. They were not involved. There was no personal relationship with any of the individuals, and between the perpetrators and the victims, and the perpetrators were not involved in the drug trade or in trying to rob the office building of the occupants of the newspaper. So the answer is no.
No. Yeah.
No. Okay. Their motivations were for a cause, and they announced their cause. They, in fact, in the radio news that preceded this program, you could hear them shouting "Allahu Akbar" repeatedly. That means Allah is greater. They were killing for their God. I would ask you, Scott, in Boko Haram in Nigeria, when the fundamentalist Muslims, in their attempt to establish a Islamic state under Sharia law, kidnap, rape, torture, and murder, even enslave, young girls. Is that a criminal act?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope they think it's a criminal act.
When the Islamic State goes to a Christian home and takes the girl the young girls to be sex slaves, kills the men, and orders the women who are too old to be sex slaves to convert or die, would you consider that to be a criminal act?
I would consider that to be a terrorist act, yes, or a criminal act, yes.
When the 19 Muslims flew suicide missions, and they were suicide bombers and flew planes into America's building and killed 3,000 people one morning, would you consider that a criminal act?
Yeah.
When Hassan, psychiatrist at Fort Hood, that announced that he was going to take revenge on American troops and shouted Allahu Akbar as he murdered a dozen people in the army base there in central Texas. Would you call that a criminal act?
If you don't, there's something wrong. Yeah, that's a criminal act.
When the Muslims in the West Bank were part of either Fatah, the PLO, or Hamas, kidnapped four young Israeli children and systematically murdered them, would you consider that to be a criminal act?
Yes.
Did all of those criminal acts that we have discussed, do they have a common denominator?
Yeah. The people portraying them they have a very common denominator amongst them.
They're all Muslims. And they all committed their terrorist act not for money. They didn't perpetrate their terrorist act as a part of a robbery. They didn't perpetrate their terrorist act as part of a drug cartel. They didn't perpetrate their terrorist act because they knew the individual and there was a dispute in the relationship with the individual. It was exclusively perpetrated in the name of their religion, and they screamed in every case Allahu Akbar as they were perpetrating the act, confessing to the crime. Is that not true?
Yeah, that's true.
Then why does the world have such a tough time identifying Islam with criminality?
I don't know. They all know that the one bad Muslim, I guess. I don't know. They all know one person that's a Muslim that isn't like that, who's not really a Muslim.
So the fact that Muslims perpetrate 99% of the world's terrorist acts, 99%, that they have an exclusive, an absolute monopoly on terrorism, they're willing to ignore the common denominator in all terrorist acts because somebody might know somebody that might know somebody that they think might be a nice person that they think might be a Muslim. Is that rational? Or is it perhaps that they have been indoctrinated educationally that tolerance is a virtue and that it's enlightened to be multicultural and to be tolerant? And if a informed and rational conclusion about disavowing a murderous, deceitful, deadly plague is considered intolerant, then we must disregard all evidence and all reason and embrace it.
Well, yeah, it sounds crazy, and you're laying it out in a way that I don't think anybody can argue that, because that's the state of things. I mean,
we're insane.
Yeah.
It's absolute, total, and complete insanity, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Yes.
And it's not even that. It's not even that. If you have to, they set it up to where you have to agree with me on everything I say. Because if you don't, then you're scared. And, you know, you're phobic of some kind, or you're racist, or you're filled with hate.
The cartoonists at Charlie Hebdo that were murdered in cold blood, executed. Were they afraid of Islam? When they drew cartoons accurately depicting Muhammad as inspiring terrorism, inspiring mass murder, to do so, were they courageous and therefore not afraid of Islam, or were they wimps and therefore phobics and afraid of Islam?
No, they were doing what was right. They were standing up.
They encouraged it. I've written the most comprehensive book on the Islamic scriptures. It's the most contextual, best documented, most comprehensive analysis of the Quran and Hadith, putting the Quran in chronological order through the Hadith that's ever been compiled. I did so under my own name. I did 3,000 radio interviews denouncing Islam under my own name. I received 1,000 death threats as a result of doing so. You think I did so because I was afraid, I was phobic of Islam? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Glenn on the line. Glenn, I'd like to ask you a question. If there was an organization that documented its belief systems, like let's take the Ku Klux Klan, for example, the KKK. And let's say that the KKK, rather than being a quasi-secret society, published all of its internal constitution and manifesto. And then the KKK became extraordinarily popular worldwide. And they began to perpetrate terrorist action. They perpetrated so many of them worldwide that they developed an exclusivity where they were perpetrating virtually 100% of terrorist acts worldwide. And that they were committing acts where they were kidnapping hundreds of young girls at a time and raping them. And they were doing it around the world. And they were taking little girls and they were sexually mutilating them. And they were hunting down around the world people who would not surrender to the KKK and saying, you either join us or we're going to kill you. And then they were perpetrating mass murders around the world. Do you think that the world would systematically say, we cannot tolerate the KKK, we must expose and condemn the KKK, and that they would do so collectively with one voice?
Well, sure, quite possibly or probably. However, the KKK does not represent more than 1/7 of the world's population.
I said, what if it became extraordinarily popular and it represented, you know, 1.5 billion people?
Well, when the numbers get that large, you know, the people are afraid. They may not admit it, but they're afraid. And the reason I called in so early this morning was I wanted to take issue somewhat with you about these, and the people tend to underestimate these things, or if it's not affecting them, they tend to underestimate. I don't think these people at the satirical magazine were necessarily acting courageously. They may not have liked things about Islam, but I suspect they were a bit naive and presumptuous. I don't think they thought this could happen to them, even though their offices had been bombed previously. One time, I believe in 2001, that story said. Mm-hmm. But that's been a while since 2000. It's been a while since then. And, people forget. And when I see satirists.
And by the way, I would argue that point. I would easily agree with you on the point that it is likely that a columnist and a cartoonist is not.
He's not an ideological.
He's not likely to be a courageous individual. The only place I would beg to differ is that we have the issue in one of the Baltic countries. I don't know if it was Norway or Scandinavian countries. I think it was also in Norway, where a cartoonist that drew the now famous Muhammad picture where his turban had a bomb in it, which is a very telling and accurate presentation of the suicide bombings that his religion inspires. And of course, he had fatwas against them and multiple attacks and hunted down. So as a cartoonist, for a significant paper, you would have to know that depicting Muhammad accurately in a cartoon is going to put your life in jeopardy. I don't think there's any chance that you would not know that. Now, attributing courage to that is perhaps projecting too much. But
right. No, they could know that the threat is Muslims do not ascribe to the First Amendment. That's especially not globally. So they're not out to defend, everyone's right. As a matter of fact,
free speech has never been legal in Islam. Muhammad systematically murdered the three journalists who initially spoke against him. There were three poets because it was an illiterate society. In fact, there wasn't even an alphabet for Arabic at the time that Muhammad allegedly received the Quran. And so the three most influential individuals that recognized that Islam was a destructive, demonic, deceitful, counterproductive, completely false, nothing more than a criminal enterprise spoke out against them, and the three women were systematically murdered by Muhammad, just as these fellows murdered the 12 people associated with the newspaper. So if you look at death to journalists who dare tell the truth about Islam, depict Islam accurately, this goes all the way back to Muhammad. And Muslims have been doing this now for 1,400 years. Islam is a criminal enterprise. It's really not anything more than that. It's a criminal enterprise.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Regardless as to whether the journalists, and I do realize that they were afraid for their lives. They had concern over their well-being because the reason that there were two police officers killed at the newspaper is that they were serving as bodyguards for the cartoonists and for the editor of the newspaper is the reason they were killed in the attack, and the bodyguards were there because of the constant death threats by Muslims. But why is the world so unwilling to embrace the lone common denominator? If you speak about Islam and tell the truth, look at Salman Rushdie in the Satanic Verses. It's an accurate depiction of one of the most important aspects of Islam, one that's chronicled in great detail in both the Hadith and the Quran, that Muhammad admitted that he was inspired by Satan. And yet, Muslims hunted him down, put fatwas on him, and tried to murder him.
Well, it's not just a matter of size. It's also, I would suggest, it's also a matter of chronology and duration and other facts. And we're talking about, you know, a religion that has permeated empires, conquered nations. It is very much involved with the modern economic system and the oil sales and stuff like that. And I would suggest several things. People are afraid. Secularists, Christians, people with other affiliations and ideologies are afraid to criticize Islam. Islam is not racist, but it's doctrinaire. In other words, if you don't adhere to our doctrine, it's all about their doctrine. If you don't adhere to our doctrine, we're going to kill you.
Islam is also racist. Let's not diminish the racial aspect of Islam. Throughout Africa, there are two classes of Muslims, and if you are the non-Arab class of Muslim, if you're an African Muslim, you have very few rights compared to the Arab Muslim. And you look at the Sudan. In the Sudan, Arab Muslims murdered almost a million African Muslims.
Exactly. So yeah, there is a racial component, but worldwide, many people don't think much about that primarily. Right. But you know, as people are afraid of ruffling the feathers of Jews also because they're afraid of being accused of being anti-Semitic. They're afraid of power and influence. So people fear for various reasons. They fear the Muslims because they are afraid of being killed.
Yeah, you want to hear an interesting conundrum as it relates to Jews and Islam? Do you know that they have done a number of independent testing labs, have done extensive DNA testing on the Muslims in the West Bank and in Gaza who claim to be Palestinians? There's no such thing as a Palestinian, but they claim to be Palestinians, and they're always just thought to be just Arab Muslims.
Right.
Do you know that that a significant percentage of them, I mean a very significant percentage of them, from a DNA perspective, are Jewish?
Oh, yeah, and much more so than the average Ashkenazi. And the thing is, they converted at the scimitar point, you know, in previous centuries.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. They are Jews who were forced to convert to Islam. It's either convert or die. And so the Muslims in the West Bank and in Gaza who are committing terrorist acts against Jews racially are Jews.
Right. We got a one which begs the question of doctrinal compromise in the face of violence. About today's incident, I thought of one particular thing. In the now very old but very much classic movie, Torah, 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 which depicts the Japanese invasion of Pearl Harbor, we see depicted Admiral Yamamoto standing on the bridge of his ship, and in response to the jubilation of his junior officers, he says, "I fear that we have awakened a sleeping giant and filled him with a terrible resolve."
Yes.
One can hope that this would be what we see in, you know, Paris is very much agog this morning, and they've been very much asleep. They've acquiesced. Europe has acquiesced at every turn to Muslim infringement and inculcation, and they are now perhaps these types of things, while horrific, could have the effect of waking the sleeping giant.
Paris in the a month ago, there were three Islamic suicide attacks via vehicular homicide and bombings and gunnings that took place all while screaming Allahu Akbar, and there was no common, even though Islam was the common denominator, no one addressed the Islamic motivation for the attacks. There have been horrific terrorist attacks perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims throughout Europe, and no one seems to draw the obvious connection. When they had video, and they have video of this, the 10 minutes of execution screaming Allahu Akbar, when they had video also of the fundamentalist Muslim quoting the Quran and screaming Allahu Akbar as he murdered the two individuals in London. No one was willing to awaken to the realization that Islam is a criminal enterprise and it must be dealt with as a criminal enterprise. I just don't see it. You know, 9/11 wasn't sufficient. 3,000 people died on 9/11, and yet we declared a war on terrorism as opposed to Islam.
Right. Well, one of the things you can do when crime becomes rampant is arm yourself. Free men carry guns, slaves unarmed.
Yeah.
One thing I would like to see here in America, like to see the administration tell the UN bill pound stand with regard to restrictions of personal firearms, affirm the Second Amendment, encourage Americans to be armed. And if this kind of stuff happens here, after enough of the people, terrorists like this, scream Allahu Akbar, start firing, after they get off two or three rounds, find themselves met by a hail of bullets by people carrying concealed, that might, give them pause.
Yeah, it's interesting that they call it gun control, and virtually every liberal in America is in favor of gun control. In fact, the vast majority of Americans actually favor gun control. To promote gun control, you have to undermine the only means of authorizing control in America. You have to completely negate and undermine the U.S. Constitution. You can have absolutely no form of any kind of gun control, not on ownership, not on possession of a gun. You can, according to the U.S. Constitution, you can carry any kind of weapon with you at any time, at any place, and you can own any kind of weapon. That's what the U.S. Constitution says. And so, for there to be control over guns, you have to negate the only source of control that America has, which is the U.S. Constitution. All control turns to chaos without the Constitution, and yet you find almost every liberal who is a control fanatic speaking out for gun control, not realizing that they're cutting off their own head.
Right. And of course they utilize word weasels to make their argument. They start babbling about well-regulated militias and military taking the place of the militia and all this garbage.
The Constitution is really clear. Thomas Jefferson was completely opposed to an established military. Wholly included. He thought that an established military was the epitome of evil, that there was nothing that was more harmful to the freedom of a nation than an established military.
And he knew what the crossing of the Rubicon meant.
Right. Absolutely knew what the crossing of the Rubicon meant, and knew exactly what to, when Constantine did it, and when Julius Caesar did it. You're immediately in a position where you're no longer dealing with, in fact, that was the moment that Rome went from being a republic to being a dictatorship, becoming Imperial Rome, is the crossing of the Rubicon. But, here we have an America where the Constitution is really clear. It says that a free militia, a militia is absolutely essential to a free society. And a militia is a non-government armed group. It said groups of individuals who band together, who are armed, that have no association with the government.
Well-regulated does not mean limited. It means well-equipped and well-trained.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so the realization is that the Constitution and the Second Amendment of the Constitution envisioned that we would not have an established military. The only reason that Thomas Jefferson actually agreed to support the U.S. Constitution was that he saw the Second Amendment as an amendment against an established military by the United States, and that militia would take the place of the military, and that people would have no restrictions on their ability to possess and to carry arms. And the only point I want to make here that it would be slightly different than yours is that, I own guns and I shoot guns. I'm not a hunter. I shoot guns in tin cans and fruit and back in my farm and I'll shoot the trap and skeet and that sort of thing. But I really don't own guns for personal protection. I have guns that are designed for that? Yes, but my protection, I trust in Yahweh.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And on a day-to-day basis, I generally don't feel under threat in any of the places I go,
Yes.
However, I My attitude towards guns is the same. I shot rifles at Boy Scout camp. I shot on an intramural rifle team in high school.
I
took a pistol course in college. And I own guns for personal defense. Mm-hmm. And I have a permit to carry concealed, but I do not on a regular basis. The reason I have that is I can foresee a time when things could get a little squirrely, and I might just want to, have that 38 on my belt when I go to Walmart at 1 in the morning after work.
I know that, for example, my wife is much more comfortable if I take one of our pistols or revolvers out of in fact, she would prefer two out of our safe, and that when we're back on the farm, we have one that is reachable because our house is a long way from a road, and by the time that someone could arrive, if you called 911, the events are going to be over, and so it provides a level of comfort for her. As for me, I really have no fear in that regard. And it's because I figure that so long as we are all working together as part of the covenant, providing value in terms of informing people as to that which they should not trust and whom they should place their trust, that, I'm not going to be erased so easily. It's interesting, Glenn, that I wonder, and I don't even think you have to wonder, as to whether America would be any different today had the United States never established a military. I mean, if you look back in time, the War of 1812 was won by militias, not by the military. The U.S. military capitulated, turned tail and ran, which is why Washington, D.C. was burned. But we would not have gotten involved in World War I. We wouldn't have engaged in the Spanish-American War. We would not have engaged in the American-Mexican-American Wars. But there would have been you mentioned Tora, 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 which is, of course, Tiger, 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 and that was the code name for the Japanese attack. There would not have been a Japanese attack. I mean, they attacked the U.S. Navy. They would not have had a U.S. Navy. They would not have attacked the U.S. Navy. And the Japanese had no interest in invading Hawaii, much less any part of the United States. The Germans had no interest in invading and occupying America on the other side. What difference would there be other than that if we did not have a military, we wouldn't have lost 600,000 lives in the Civil War, and Americans would have choice. You'd have more choice. You could choose to be part of the Confederacy or the Union, which I think would be a better situation. But would there really be a difference in America if we didn't have a military?
I suppose you could pursue this question if you were a cowardly isolationist in denial of manifest destiny. But, I mean, why would you want to do that?
I don't look at my military as a source of my freedom or independence. I know for certain they have never done anything that provided freedom and independence for me. And I absolutely do not agree with manifest destiny. I think that is that was a philosophy that caused the literal eradication, annihilation of the indigenous peoples.
Native American,
which I am.
Military had a big hand in that, this guy's like Custer, something in that, big, brave guys. One has to wonder about, we were accused of being isolationists, up until World War I because we had oceans on either side, but, would that necessarily have been a bad thing if we weren't intervening
absolutely.
In everybody's everything all over the world? Like, Switzerland works for Switzerland, for Liechtenstein.
Well, you look at, at Putin in Russia. Putin in Russia is a nationalist. He's not an internationalist. I mean, his only interest is what is good for his people. He's not out there trying to harass people around the world. The United States is the antithesis of that. You know, we're invading Afghanistan, we're invading Iraq, we're bombing Libya, we're bombing Syria. We run our troops into countries around the world. We run our predators drones and send missiles into countries around the world. We are the antithesis of that, man. We're meddling in everybody's affairs. I want you to tell me, how did our meddling in everybody's affairs make life better for America? I think it did just the opposite.
Even this French thing, it's a terrorist crime. It killed 12 people, and Obama's got to get on the horn right away saying, oh, we sent in solidarity, we're going to jump in and help, or a plane crashes in the Pacific, you know, in the Pacific Rim. We'll send our ships. Can't we keep our nose out of anything ever?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a terrorist act. There's no such thing as a terrorist doctrine. And so the crime was perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. Tell the truth if you're going to talk about it.
Right.
But second of all, why evoke there? You know, France was our original partner, our original ally. But the French weren't our ally because they had an affinity for America. They were only an ally because they were at war with England, and anything they could do to thwart the English was what they did. They weren't mercurial in their support. It wasn't an ally in the terms of what you consider someone that, oh, we're allied with France. Well, no. I mean, come on.
Right.
Wake up.
It's been so invoked to pan the French culture for a long time. I mean, back around 9/11, when they were hesitant to get involved in the coalition of the willing, you know, it was like, oh, French stinks. You know, everybody, oh, those silly French. It was cool to be against the French.
Renamed French fries to freedom fries as a result of the French not willing to invade Afghanistan and Iraq based on a pile of lies. I don't find a whole lot of people apologizing to the French for insulting them for not buying into the same lies that evidently duped the majority of Americans.